75 degrees outside now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, thanks for being here this afternoon. The August recess continuing, and Congressman Cliff Bentz with us this afternoon. Congressman, thanks for being on.
Oh, it's great to join you, Kyle. We're very happy to have this opportunity.
So give us some overall thoughts as you have this work period back in the district about overall what Congress has accomplished, maybe particularly the work of the House in the past several months.
Well, our primary focus over the past 2 months has been on the budget and on our appropriation bills. And that included, I think, the first bill, in fact, the only appropriation bill that we've successfully moved out of the well, we actually had two. One was the National Defense Authorization Act bill. We got that out of the House, and the other was the Veterans Bill. Got that out of the House. But the other 11 appropriation bills still languish, including the Farm Bill. And so we'll be taking up those 11 bills in September. We only have 12 days in September, and the end of the fiscal year is September 30th. So we could sadly see a government shutdown. But that's what we've been working on. I will say that the conversations on the Republican side are all how in the world can we, you know, slow down this spending train that we've been on. And I'll just tell you, it's extraordinarily difficult to slow down spending, but that's what we've been working on.
And for you personally, what are your kind of main areas of focus the past several months?
Well, I've been focusing on the issues that come up in my two committees. I'm on natural resources, and I'm chairman of the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee. And so we've been focusing on trying to take steps to modify the Endangered Species Act in a way that makes it less damaging to communities. And then I've been focusing on trying to stop the attempt to destroy the four lower Snake River dams up in Washington State, but nonetheless hugely important to Oregon because of a navigation and electrical generation. So I've been working on that. And then on my Judiciary Committee side, much of that committee's focus has been on oversight on the border, and Secretary Mayorkas of Homeland Security and Christopher Wray out of the FBI. Those kind of hearings have been taking up a lot of time.
Let's talk about this hydroelectric power situation for a bit here. Our last interview, you brought this up as well. And as you mentioned, these are, of course, in Washington and the Klamath area dealing with a similar situation. What are some of your broader concerns about the direction we're going and the way that it looks like it may pan out with these dams being removed?
Well, I'm opposed to dam removal, of course, and I've been taking an active role in attempting, along with Congressman LaMalfa, to slow down or stop or reverse the removal of the Klamath dams. We have not been successful in that, and part of the reason has to do with those dams being privately owned. They're not public dams. The dams on the Snake River are public dams, and so we have a much better chance of getting something done. But my concern is driven in significant part by the fact that these hydroelectric facilities provide firm, reliable power. And as we transition or add, whatever the right word is, more and more intermittent power in the form of solar panels and wind, you have to have reliable power, and hydro gives you that. So all these attempts to take out dams is going in exactly the wrong direction for the future that has so much solar and wind in it.
Do you get much support for your viewpoint from either side of the aisle?
Huge support from the Republican side of the aisle, almost no support from the Democrat side of the aisle, which is really sad because these dams are hugely expensive. They won't be put back in. They won't. The money is just too huge. The cost is too great. And so when we lose these pieces of infrastructure, they're gone. And so the people need to recognize the incredible value that firm power provides. And what's really odd is that many Democrats also oppose nuclear power, which is firm power, and then far, far, far more safe than it has ever been. And yet they also, for the most part, oppose nuclear power. There's some movement there. By they, I mean the Democrats. There's some movement toward accepting the fact that nuclear power is a necessity, but way too slow.
You know, last year in March, I was over in the gorge for several days in Oregon, and on the way back, as I went to Portland for a day, went in and got to tour one of the dams, and I honestly just thought of this as we got into this topic, and I don't remember which one I went to, but was able to take the typical tour that's available there and learn about all the things there. And I'd stopped there, but it had been 25 years probably since I had, and it was just fascinating to see how that whole process works and to look at the historical aspect of everything that went into building those and the big effort there to do that and, kind of the idea back when those all went in. It seems to be a very different picture today.
Well, everybody's become too accustomed to having the lights come on when they hit the switch. When the power goes out, you're basically back in the Stone Age. And folks just haven't had that happen. And so I think they're dealing, those who want to take out dams, from the luxury of too many years of never having to worry about it. And so they start taking things for granted. They don't value it. And so that's very, very sad. I will tell you very quickly, we have scientists. I held a hearing up in Richland, Washington, on the dams and the value of them from the four Snake River dams. Well attended, 400 people. I had a scientist explain that the primary problem is the ocean. Now that the way that we operate dams to make sure they are protective of fish have been addressed, we need to be addressing the problem in the ocean.
Interesting. Let's switch topics here. Talk about the fire situation. Of course, in our area, we've got new fires today from the lightning storms last night. But that also brings up the topic about what you do after fires. Right now, all the fires we have here are relatively small. And I think the biggest one were to about 50 acres or something. But one of the back and forth pieces for as long as I've been here is how you manage and how you deal with a forest after the fires. Talk about your perspective.
Well, first of all, having just spent a bunch of time down there, it was really sad. The smoke was so thick and so it's so damaging, like to your vineyards and to people's lungs and the Shakespeare Festival and everything else down in the south part of my district. You just want to scream when you see the lack of activity, aggressive activity. There's activity, but not enough to remove the fuel from the forest. But as far as knowing, as you just pointed out, we're not going to get rid of these fires. They're going to be around. Why aren't we aggressively trying to replant and reforest after one of these fires? And more to the point, if you're going to grow up a stand of trees and not just a great big bunch of brush, you better have a way of keeping the weeds and other stuff that you don't want growing down while you get the trees a chance to get started. All those efforts are made extraordinarily difficult by people who don't want herbicides being used and people who don't want folks going in with any sort of mechanization to these post-fire situations. It's really, really sad, Kyle, because if you don't go in quickly, then the forest becomes so dangerous because of all those burned up trees that haven't fallen down yet. You can't go in. And so they're creating these off-limit areas just because they're too dangerous. It's really sad. And it's a recipe for the future disaster that's being played out right now for everybody in Oregon that's around a tree.
You know, the smoke right here in the Umpqua Valley currently at this hour is unhealthful for sensitive groups. I think it's at about a 112 on the Oregon DEQ chart, but I know it points in the Bend area and up in Eugene. It's been far worse than that. And you wonder about long-term impacts, maybe particularly for certain folks, certain medical issues, or people whose jobs just have them, working outside more often, if we're going to see some issues down the road from all the smoke we're breathing in?
So there's absolutely no doubt that children and the elderly, our lungs are being damaged long-term by the smoke. There is no doubt. And that alone, you would think, would provide a basis for aggressively getting into the forest and removing unneeded fuel. Why we're not doing this when we know the smoke is damaging our children and everybody, elderly, I do not know. But we've been aggressively addressing this issue in the committees I am on, and I'm very, very happy to be the chair of the Water Committee, because I can work with the chair of the Public Lands Committee and the forest folks and say, look, when you burn up a watershed, you have less water. And so let's make sure we're getting this fuel out of there so we can preserve the sponge that the forest is.
Talk about your focus during this August recess. What have you been involved in?
Well, a significant time spent traveling the district, going from town hall to town hall. We just finished 4 days on the road. We did 8 town halls, Myrtle Creek and then Grants Pass, then down into Medford, then over to Klamath Falls, then to Lakeview, then up to Burns, then to John Day, and then we finished at Baker City last night. And those town halls take a couple of hours each, and then there's a lot of driving in between, as you might guess. I don't know how many hundreds of miles we went. But those kinds of things are extraordinarily important. We have conference calls every once in a while. Jim Jordan, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee on which I sit, called us on a conference call 3 days ago. He wants us to look into the possibility of an impeachment inquiry on President Biden. And when I say look into, I mean to do what you do have to do to make sure the facts are there before you initiate such a thing. So that we're never away from the work of Congress, even though we're in the district.
What did you hear from the people at the Myrtle Creek Town Hall?
Well, they want some focus. There was a significant contingent of veterans there that want me to focus on the Roseburg Veterans Home and the Veterans Hospital. And, of course, timber management and smoke came up. The homeless issue came up repeatedly. People's exposure to drugs and the ballot measure that's made basically all drugs legal, huge negativity about that. And I join in opposing such a thing and trying to get back to maybe repealing that ballot measure. There's a lot of discussion about the ONC lands and how to get more wood generated from them. Commissioner Tim Freeman was there. He's a good friend. We served together in the legislature. Had a lot of discussion about how to get back into the woods.
Now, are you going to be back in Douglas County at all again before you get back to Washington, D.C.?
Probably not, because we have 20 counties and we only did 8 town halls, so we have 12 more to go, and that'll be taking up that time. In fact, I just got off the phone before we went on the air here with you to talk with my chief of staff about Pendleton and Hermiston and Heppner and Milton Freewater and Wallawa. That's where we'll be going next.
You know, I was looking at a map last hour, and it occurs to me, especially with the increased land in Douglas County and some other areas you picked up after redistricting, what's it like? How complex is it to try to manage representing an area that's bigger than a lot of states?
Well, it's bigger than every state east of the Mississippi, and my district is actually bigger than the state of Washington, which I often remind my Republican friends like Dan Newhouse and Kathy McMorris Rogers from up in that state that my district's bigger than their entire state. What it's like is, not too surprisingly, it's mostly rural. It's 3/4 of the state of Oregon. It has the same number of people, 750,000 roughly, that each of the other 5 congressional districts have. We have 6 in total. It's so odd because the other 5 collectively take up 1/4 of the state, and our district takes up 3/4. And so you know where all the people are. Obviously, they're not in my district, but that means many times that the issues that I deal with are very similar, very rural, a lot of space, a lot of travel. A lot of feelings that they're never listened to, but I guarantee I listen, and I'm working on the issues that are, I think, fairly broad-based in the district.
Let's talk about some of the federal issues overall. Are you concerned, and you kind of alluded to it early in the interview, about the level of federal spending right now and where the deficit stands?
Oh, my concern is an understatement, to say the least. The challenge that we face, and it's just huge, is driven in significant part by our aging population and the fact that folks are very, very reliant upon Social Security and Medicare, and at the same time we have to protect those programs, but those programs plus defense take up a huge chunk of what we spend. In fact, it's probably really close to 80%, maybe a little bit more. And so if you're going to adjust the budget downward and you take those items off the table, and they are off the table, then you're left with a very modest part of the total budget that you can actually reduce. And we have huge and very pointed discussions ongoing in our Republican caucus over how to cut what's called discretionary spending, which is the label on that, let's say 15-20% of the budget that we can cut. And so it's hugely challenging and hugely challenging. I ask, by the way, as I went to my eight town hall meetings, I would ask the folks that attend what they want me to do when it comes to this budget. And I show up, I have a PowerPoint presentation, and I show everybody where we are. And I say, tell me, what should we do? And a lot of these meetings have turned on those issues.
And I imagine because historically you ask that question and people want to cut things that don't help them, but they want to make sure everything that helps them now continues to flow just fine.
Well, you're exactly right. It's kind of like taxes. The old phrase, don't tax me, don't tax thee, tax that person behind the tree. I think that actually was generated hundreds of years ago. But the point is nobody wants to have to face these issues. I will tell you one interesting thing that kept coming up, and that is the huge challenge we're facing without enough workforce to work in nursing homes. It's a huge challenge, and I've had it explained many, many times. And the challenge is not only people working in them, it's how we pay for them. And so the focus there, one of the focuses was on the Vail Nursing Home, just 20 miles from where I'm sitting right now out here in Eastern Oregon. And their nursing home is about to shut down. And somebody came out and said, you know, this nursing home was built in 1947, and the community dug up $90,000. In 1947, the community dug it up, not the federal government, and built this nursing home. I don't know how much that is in today's dollars, but the focus on all of these issues, I think, is going to become far more local and then federal as time passes, because we're reaching the point at the federal government level of adding more to it. It's going to be very difficult.
And I am told that several hundred nursing homes have closed in I think the last few years in America. Some of that is people getting home health and that being a more favorite option by some. But either way, workforce for that is very crucial, and these jobs are not ones that everybody jumps on very quickly.
That's correct. And in fact, we had a meeting. Kevin McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, came out to Oregon 3 weeks ago for a fundraiser exercise for me, actually. And one of the groups that we met with were nursing home operators. And they spent an hour and a half, the nursing home operators, talking with the speaker, saying, look, we want to bring in 100,000 nursing home trained people from out of the United States on a visa, a work permit, and then they can go back, but they'll come back out to help. 100,000 is what they believe it would take to try to get back to even.
Wow. Talk about looking towards the fall. What's some of the priorities, some of the focus that you have, things you want to get done once you return?
Well, it's once we return, that the 3 weeks that we're looking at right now are going to be taken up in significant part on budget issues, those 11 budget bills we talked about earlier. But in addition, because I'm on judiciary, we are going to have a number of the witnesses that were involved in the Hunter Biden situation in front of our committee. I understood they've been subpoenaed and they're coming in. So there's going to be a great deal of discussion about what the Biden family was doing when it came to raising $20 million, I think, during the period of time that now President Biden was vice president. And there'll be much discussion about whether or not he was involved in that and whether or not there should be any further pursuit of the discussion regarding impeachment. So I'm not very far up the ladder. I'm right in the middle, seniority-wise in judiciary. So I don't have much to say about what we're focusing upon, but I will certainly be there, and that's what I understand we'll be listening to people from that space. We also have the Attorney General Merrick Garland coming before us. I think maybe the first week we're back. Which is the second week of September. So it's going to be a very busy month.
And do you anticipate we're going to end up with a continuing resolution again?
Oh, great question. As I mentioned, the fiscal year ends September 30th. Kevin McCarthy already said when he was here 2 weeks ago that he was going to be asking for support for a CR or continuing resolution to keep the budget for this year going into the first month of next fiscal year, which would be October. There's many people on the Freedom Caucus side of things that object to that and would rather have government shut down. I do not support a government shutdown.
Well, we'll wrap it up there as we're losing cell service. Congressman Cliff Bentz wrapping up the program today. 1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.